You're listening to the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast hosted by Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, and Brad Tarver. Well, Apple had a pretty bad, terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day last week. So some poor employee was posting a version of iOS 11, 11.02 to be exact, for internal testing, and whoopsie, wouldn't you know it, he accidentally made it briefly publicly available. Have you ever had a nightmare about doing something so stupid that you're probably going to get fired?
Oh, definitely. Like accidentally dropping a database or, you know, deleting a bunch of stuff out of a table that you'll never get back. You're like, oh crap, how do I get that back? Where's the backup? What do we have? You know, always, yeah.
Many years ago when I had a production database that I went and we were supposed to reboot one that was in development and production was right next to it, and I pressed the button, and on those old Dell servers, if you didn't let go of the button, if you didn't depress it, it wouldn't power off. So I pushed in on it and I'm like, ah, I look like I stepped on a landmine. What do I do? And they're like, just, you're not going to stay there till the next maintenance window. Let the button off and we'll take our lumps for it. But that moment you press the button and you know that you've really made a horrible, I think I've made a terrible mistake. And then you can't take your finger off the button because you're afraid of what the ramifications are going to be. So
why did you do that?
We've all been there.
So Brian, you just have to stand there until the maintenance window and then we can reboot that server.
Just bring me my slop bucket every so often and change it and tell my loved ones I'll miss them. So yeah, this poor guy, he posts a version of iOS 11, which I guess was being posted to test the HomePod. They were going to roll it out internally to Apple employees for broader testing. And instead of putting the flags in the compiler to leave out the super secret stuff, it was, you know, for internal release. So, you know, hey, we'll just leave everything in it, which again, in retrospect, seems like a really bad idea. Just roll out the stuff with the HomePod stuff in it, you know, if that's what you're rolling it out for. But there you have it. He did it. And Steve Troughton-Smith dug into it, and boy, did we have a treasure trove of details that got released. I feel like we've preemptively ruined Christmas. Our geek Christmas comes in September every year, and now we know what's under the tree. And I'm feeling kind of sad about it.
I don't know if I'm feeling sad. I mean, we don't know what it looks like yet. We don't know the... We know the outline. We know, like, the... It's like we know what the face looks like, but we don't know maybe the nose, or we don't know what color the eyes are, or what color the hair is. You know, we saw it in a shadow or something.
We gave our Christmas presents an ultrasound, and it's really kind of well, I guess there was not a lot that's surprising, but it's still kind of gonna.
I think most of it that was in there is stuff that is leaked at one time or another, but it's been small leaks that were never confirmed. And so, I mean, usually there's about three or four times as much stuff that's leaked than what we actually get. So it's you kind of learn to take all that with a grain of salt and then, you know, have a scorecard after to see how everybody did. If it's in the firmware, if it's in the, or the OS, then you kind of figure it's coming. So, I mean, this is just like the, you know, the flaming, what's the reference?
The burning bush.
Yeah. This is the
burning iPhone bush.
Or you at least hope that they're going to have whatever they think is working today will be there tomorrow.
Maybe Apple's just trying to like pull us all totally off target. And this is like one, maybe they meant to do this.
Set expectations appropriately ahead of time. Well, one of the first things that leaked was the HomePod's UI sounds. Did you guys get a chance to listen to these? These got posted on Twitter. Steve Troughton-Smith's Twitter was where all of this was, and I think Mac Stories may have put a link that combined it all in one place. Did you guys get a chance to hear it?
No, I didn't hear it.
I clicked on the article, and I looked around the six colors and some of the Twitter stuff, but I never saw a link to the actual sounds, so... There was so much written about this that I was looking at that I read into some of the more detailed stuff about the screen and the resolution, a lot of the stuff that Gruber posted.
Through the magic of editing, I'm going to post the link to you guys really quickly, and I'll edit this out. But go ahead and take a listen to this really quickly. It's very brief. It's like 50 seconds.
I like that one, the passcode, the last one.
The passcode.
Yeah, it's got that layered sound that some of the newer alarms and stuff have.
Reminded me a lot of the Wii, is what it sounded like to me. Sort of a lot of those sort of cutesy, xylophone-esque, whimsical, cartoony.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've heard any of those, but I can see that. I can see that.
I do like the sound of those things, and I guess from the file names, we know they're going to be alarms and general UIs, but it sounds generally pleasant. To compare it to the Echo, I don't really recall the Echo having a lot of those types of similar analogs, I guess. Or am I just misremembering that? I mean, you have alarms and whatnot, but a lot of that stuff, I can't think of a counterpart to, on the Echo.
Well, it's just kind of a bong, and then Alexa says something most of the time.
Yeah, kind of when it reboots, or if, you know, if I reboot my wireless router, I'll get that boom kind of, and then it just spins for a second, and then she's ready to go.
So I guess we also got the icon, one of the icons for the prototype D22, which is going to be probably what's been referred to as the iPhone Pro by a lot of people, also nicknamed Ferrari. So we've confirmed the edge-to-edge, top-to-bottom, with only the sensor and camera cut out at the top. And from the looks of it, the display being 1125 by 2436. So for those listening, that's not quite an iPhone Plus, but it will be a step up from the non-Plus phone. So I kind of think of it as the sort of the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, but for phones.
That sounds exactly like what I think it is. It's that Goldilocks in the middle, not quite a Pro, which I don't want a Pro because I don't want the big form factor. But if it's slightly bigger, slightly wider, that's fine. Maybe a little bit taller, but closer to the size of a non-Plus model, but with more screen real estate. I think that would be awesome. The more they can pack in there, the better. It seems like a kind of an odd resolution. And if you read Gruber's story, he kind of goes into trying to explain how, you know, that could work and how the scaling and that. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. For Gruber's got a pretty long write-up comparing it to the one from a couple years ago before the first Plus came out that he had written.
I'm with Jim on that. I kind of like the middle ground type format, because I was never really a fan of the giant Plus size iPhone. Whenever I've run into other folks that had one, and I'd say, well, you know, whenever the Plus first came out, I would say, well, let me check out your phone. And I would just hold it in my hand. And I have long fingers. I'm 6'4". I have long feet and long hands. So and even in my hands, it seems like a very large phone. So I would like to see what this is going to look like, you know, or, you know, feel like in my hand, like, you know, first world experience type thing.
Whereas I didn't see the obvious intuitive need to go from the 12.9 to the 10.5 until I used it. This seems sort of like a no-brainer. This seems like a phone that should have probably already existed in that happy middle ground. I've always found the regular iPhone a little on the small size and the Plus a little bit too big. So we sort of needed that Goldilocks phone where you get the best of both worlds.
I always kind of thought there should be something in between the normal non-Plus size and the older, smaller size. Like make it a little bit smaller, actually, in the hand. Is not quite as small as
the SE?
The SE edition that's out now. Not quite as small as that, but not quite as big as, you know, the 6 or 7 as they are. Or is it 7 and 7S? Sorry.
Somewhere between the 4-inch of the SE form factor and the 4.7 of the normal 6 and 7 series. No, I would agree. That seemed like it's a sort of a missing product too. I would like to see one in between the size of a 4.7 and a 5.5, which is what this appears to be, and it has enough trade-offs where you're getting the better resolution in that smaller form factor, so I'm very excited about that. If there's any indication that this thing was going to be more expensive, I think the other revelation that the front-facing camera does 4K at 60 frames per second, it looks like, and the rear camera does the same thing, I think that will be sort of a dead giveaway that this is definitely going to be a more expensive model, considering that the front-facing camera only does 1080p now.
And tack on infrared onto that if...
Oh, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
The rumors, you know, I'm just saying, you know, and tack on infrared to that camera if what they've seen in the in this leak is true.
That must be why they codenamed it Ferrari, because you'd really have to have a hell of a coprocessor, as they sort of nickname their side chip or whatever you want to call it, to be able to do 4K at 60 frame, you know, at that small of a size, especially if you're going to put two of them in the same device. And right now they don't even do really anywhere close to that. I mean, 4K at 30 is really nowhere close to 60 frame.
The data rate for that is got to be insane. I mean, just how much data it's writing and as fast as it would need to write and as much space it would need to even store just small amounts of video. I mean, that's crazy.
That's probably another reason why they talked about going to H.265 or the high efficiency codec, because it's got a better compression rate than H.264. And so they'll be able to upload 4K, you know, with the same, hopefully with the same cellular rates.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, the storage on the phone, too, is also going to be a much bigger deal, right? The fact that you can do 4K at 30 frames per second still chews up an insane amount of storage on your phone. Hopefully, we're going to see some bumps in sizes if that turns out to be true. So one of the things that the Jim mentioned was the infrared sensors that were also allegedly found in the code, which sort of hint at facial recognition. The other thing that's sort of interesting there is that there's no under-the-display Touch ID that they can find any reference to. So that to me is really, really shocking if that's going to replace Touch ID on the high-end phone. Exactly how is this going to work? I mean, if Apple's doing it, they must have some confidence that it's going to be secure. Otherwise, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't ditch the Touch ID. But it seems odd to me because I don't think we've seen any other vendor who's managed a secure implementation of this. Normally, if you had a phone that could be unlocked with facial recognition, it was pretty trivial to fool it with a photo or something similar to get it to unlock. And of course, people have said the same thing about Touch ID, but you don't really see that. You don't have widespread people doing fingerprint lifts and pulling that off. So you would think that this would be an easier thing for people to fake, unless I'm just really curious how they solve this problem.
Yeah, like if I shave my goatee, you know, if I shave my goatee off, do I have to, you know, go through and teach my phone my new face?
Excellent point. If one gains or loses weight, what does that do to it as well? I mean, I'm sure there are reference points on your face that they use. I think that's how a lot of facial recognition actually works, but I don't know, it just seems, I can't wait to see what they've done that would make such a thing trustworthy if that is indeed the case, if what they've seen is true.
You're right. I mean, every implementation of that, it's like Samsung is like, hey, look what we got. Google's like, hey, what we got. Microsoft, hey, look what we got. And like 2 days later, somebody's like, I printed out a picture and put it on my face with a rubber band and I just fooled your camera.
And there were fingerprint sensors before Touch ID, but none of them were ever had the same level of security because, you know, they had the secure enclave. They accomplished making sure that through the use of that secure enclave, you couldn't switch those out between phones, right? If I don't know if you guys had ever tried with iFixit, but if you broke your home button, good luck trying to replace that with some, because you couldn't.
Yeah, it would never work again.
Yeah, it would only be you would completely disable Touch ID because it was bonded to that phone. So I'm really sort of curious how they've pulled this off and what technology they've used that they feel secure enough that this would replace your Touch ID on your with your thumbprint. I don't know. I'm very excited to see. I'm very intrigued. What did they do? How did they pull this off?
So there you go. So there's your Christmas, a little bit of your Christmas. You know what the magic trick is. You just don't know how they pulled it off yet.
Okay, I guess that is the silver lining. So they're also saying that there's indications that a tap to wake, which is found on some of the Windows Lumia phones, is going to find its way into the iPhone since it won't have a home button. Which, you know, out of all the discussion that we've had about this and no Touch ID, I never really considered that when you go bezel-less, as it ends up being, that you still have to solve that problem. Like, I didn't even think about, okay, well, how am I going to get into my phone? Because I guess I just always assumed they would find a way to put the Touch ID under the in somewhere in the screen, but I guess tap to wake wouldn't be that strange of a thing. It'll take some readjustment of the muscle memory.
Explain that to me. I guess I'm just not used to. Are you just talking about like a tap and a pattern or something like that?
That or your phone won't unlock, and you're like, hey.
Yeah, if you want to, you know, normally if you pick up your phone now, most of the time you pick up your phone, it detects the movement, the accelerometer detects the movement, and your screen will come on. That happens a lot. But if you want to access your home screen, how do you get to the home screen with no Touch ID? I heard that there's going to be some sort of software-based function, sort of like a virtual home button on the screen so that you can get back to the home screen relatively easily. We'll see. But, you know, how to wake my phone. If I pick up my phone and I want to access it right now, I press my thumb against the Touch ID, it automatically unlocks. What do I do if I don't have Touch ID and it's not, you know, face to unlock? Maybe before I get it in the point where it's looking at my face, I want to access the home button. So tap to wake. The more I sit here and think about that and the more I talk through it, I don't know how useful that would actually be. Most of the time, if I pick up my phone or move it, it automatically wakes, which I know you can disable, but I think it's on by default and most people probably don't bother to turn it off. And if you're unlocking via facial recognition, the moment I move it, it's awake. I point it at my face and then it unlocks. I don't know. I'm not really sure how that's going to be useful.
And will it work at night?
And what if somebody else picks up your phone and points it towards you and then unlocks it and then runs? Like, they've just unlocked your phone by just pointing it to your face. Or, you know, like, let's say your girlfriend is trying to read some text that you just got that you don't want her to see, and she picks up your phone and just kind of points it at you.
And you're asleep in the bed.
Yeah, and she just points it at your face and unlocks your phone, and then she's reading all this stuff that these other women sent you that you did not even ask to receive. They just sent it, and then you're in trouble for nothing.
I mean, certainly the guy is the innocent party here.
Definitely.
I get unsolicited pics from everybody in my text messages all the time.
I mean, look, I'm joking, but that's an issue. What if you could just point the phone at somebody's face? I mean, I guess you could walk in there and kind of nuzzle it under my hand and somehow use my finger to unlock it or something. But with facial recognition, it seems like you could, just like you were, I mean, the way you described that, you pick up your phone, it automatically wakes up, and then it looks at you and is like, oh, this is Brian, I'm going to unlock, and there you're using your phone. That's great. That's an amazing use of technology. But it's also, you know, like, it's like you're, okay, here's another example. You go to the police station, and I don't know anything about this, but, you know, they can't force you to unlock your phone, right? Like, you go to, that's secure.
So legally, from what I've been told, in some places, your thumbprint is considered something that they can compel you to give up. Your passcode is not. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV. But as I understand it, that's why after 48 hours of inactivity, and you've seen this on your iPad, if you have Touch ID on your iPad, you go and it says your passcode is required to re-enable Touch ID on your device. You can be compelled to provide a fingerprint. They can physically hold you down and slap your finger on it, if they really wanted to, but they can't force you to give up your passcode. So, you know, after I'm off this thing, I'm going to go and Google, because I think I'd read this on Ars or something years ago, where if you're in a situation where you feel that you're going to be compelled to unlock your phone, it's always best to turn off the Touch ID and only rely on the passcode. Because in a lot of, I guess, in some places, and again, not a lawyer, we'll have to look this up. I do recall reading this at some point in the past, and that would also jibe with the fact that Touch ID disables itself after a certain amount of time. So that even a fingerprint won't re-enable it, you have to use your passcode. So I'm not to discount what you're saying. I mean, I agree with you. That would be weird if you were asleep and someone could just point your phone at your face and wake up the phone. That would be less intrusive than placing your thumb on your phone while you're asleep and getting it to unlock.
Or the cops, like I said, just picking up your phone and pointing it at your face and saying, you know, smile, you know, and there you go. We got your phone now. We got
so,
your drug buddies' email addresses and phone numbers now, you know.
So when you train it on your face, make sure your eyes are crossed when you do it so that you can only unlock your phone by crossing your eyes.
There was a funny little meme video I saw somewhere, maybe YouTube or Facebook, and a girlfriend was trying to unlock her boyfriend's phone just because some text came in or something, and the camera cuts away to he's asleep on the couch. So she goes in there and tries to unlock his phone using his fingers and his thumbs, and it never works. And then she walks away and leaves the phone in there with him. And you see him open his eyes, and he takes one of his shoes off and touches his toe to the phone, and it unlocks.
That's not the worst thing I've heard people trying to teach the Touch ID to recognize. That's all I'll say, and I'll leave it at that. You can fill in the blanks in your own mental image.
Your nose.
Oh, now you've challenged me.
I know what you're going to be trying later, and I'm glad I'm not buying your phone on Craigslist. I will say I have used my nose to unlock my Apple Watch or dismiss messages. So I'll get a message, I'll see it, and it'll say dismiss. And if my arms are full, I will use my nose and dismiss a message. I know I can't be the only one that's done that.
No, I've done that too.
Have either of you guys seen the movie The Big Sick that came out this summer?
We were going to go see it this past weekend, and then we went to go see Atomic Blonde.
I've seen both of those, and I think I like The Big Sick better. Atomic Blonde wasn't bad, but the reason I say this, minor spoiler, at one point a character is incapacitated, let's say, and another character picks up that character's hand and uses their thumbprint to unlock their iPhone. It's like, I hope they understand why I'm doing this. So that, just hearing all this talk reminded me of that that one scene in the movie where that happens. I guess with the facial recognition, that would have been even easier.
Yeah, I haven't seen either one of those, so.
The Big Sick was pretty good. If you've listened to Kumail Nanjiani's and his wife's podcast, The Indoor Kids, where they talk about video games, there was a very special episode they did a couple years back where they pretty much give you the entire plot of the movie. So if you don't want to see the movie, you can just go listen to that episode of The Indoor Kids, and very good story.
Very special episode. We still need to do one of those.
Where I
have a drug problem or something, and you two have to talk to me about it.
I get so addicted to
Pokemon that y'all have to talk me down for a whole episode or something.
Like that Saved by the Bell
that
episode.
Would be more topical.
You're addicted to caffeine pills.
That
That was the lamest episode ever. What a horrible addiction.
Monster energy drink.
Unless you're grinding up the caffeine pills and snorting them, I'm not really sure what the problem was, but the 90s were a simpler time.
Oh, Jesse Spano.
So let's see. Allegedly, the HomePod will not have any third-party apps at launch, which, I got to thinking about this, and that's kind of sad if it's true, but I guess it's not entirely surprising. So the last precedent I could think of in this regard was the Apple Watch, where it was announced in September of 2014, but they didn't launch it until about 6 months later. But in the interim, developers could actually write apps for it. And I'm trying to think, with the iPhone, when they announced that and 6 months later, well, they didn't have an SDK. It was just web apps only. So I think this is the first thing that they've sort of pre-announced that they didn't provide an SDK for, where it was expected they would have an SDK. The original iPhone had no such expectation.
I think this is very disappointing. If you're going to compare it to things like the Echo and the other Amazon stuff and the Google Home stuff, I think you need to have some functionality built in that you can do stuff with. And maybe that doesn't mean apps, or maybe it does mean apps. I don't know. I know with my Echo, I can say, resume Spotify or whatever, and it just starts right back up. I get out of my car. I was listening to a song. I walk in my apartment and I say, lady, Spotify. That's all I have to say. And it starts the song right back up where I was in the car and just keeps on playing without missing a beat. I love that. I mean, that is the single greatest thing about Spotify and my Echo Dot that I have. I mean, just that resuming right where you were, just keep on playing. It's the reason I'm back using Spotify instead of Apple Music. And I even tried to go back to Apple Music a week or two ago just to play, just to mess with some playlists and things. And I just found myself just like wanting to do certain things that I've gotten so used to with Spotify and the Dot that I'm like, God, that's really annoying. I mean, Apple should totally have that seamless integration and just be able to, move from device to device that they don't have, that somehow Spotify does, even though they're just software. They don't even make the hardware, and yet Spotify somehow is able to go from my laptop to my phone to my iPad to my Echo Dot to my car and just keep on trucking. And Apple Music will not do that. That's really surprising.
The other thing to remember is that the HomePod is not being cast in the same light as an Echo competitor, right? It's a music device. So when it comes to third-party integrations, I'm not really sure what they would do to allow that, other than use SiriKit to allow people to do that. And to be fair, we don't even know what Siri functionality is going to be enabled. So the rumor has it, when people were seeing this at WWDC, they tried to trick it into answering to Siri and other types of things, and, no dice. Of course, those were demo models, and I'm sure they anticipated such things. Remember, things like HomeKit don't even work on the Mac, as opposed to your iOS devices. So if I try to tell Siri to turn off my office light using my Mac, the Mac version of Siri, it's like, sorry, I can't do anything with HomeKit. So we don't even know, which I think is also completely lame and terrible, and it's a complete and utter embarrassment.
Yeah, it's a huge gap. I mean, it should have the same functionality everywhere if they really want people to adopt it and start using it.
I agree, and it seems weird that they leave some of that functionality out. Like Siri on my Apple TV, I can tell to, turn on my fan, turn off my lights, tell it good night or whatever, and it'll start doing all of the things with HomeKit, but the Mac can't do it. That seems nuts to me that there's even any kind of disparity between the two platforms. Oftentimes I will try to do things with Find My Friends on my Mac, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. No seeming rhyme or reason, the same invocation each time. I don't know. I think they have to iron out a lot with Siri if they're going to depend on it. I just don't know that they're framing it in the context of, hey, this is our Echo killer. I don't know that that's the case. I feel like it's more like, hey, this is our Sonos killer, and it's good enough for us for right now. One of the things we also notice about the HomePod is that it does have a very miniature display. I mean, we knew that from the pictures, but I guess it's 272 by 340, which, aside from little animations, I can't really imagine what that's going to be used for. Since you're not supposed to be using it as a UI standing over it doing things, I don't think it's going to be very useful.
Sounds like an original iPod screen, doesn't it?
It does. We used to watch video. I think the original video iPod was
iPod video, yeah.
Which also was one of those things where Steve Jobs said, who wants to watch video on an iPod? That's stupid. And then, it came out. Those things were so tiny. I can't believe that we ever looked at those and thought those were cool.
Oh, I totally agree. That screen was so small. Remember trying to play like Ms. Pac-Man on your iPod screen?
Oh yeah. You needed an electron microscope to see that. It was terrible. So let's see, what else did we find inside of 1102? So apparently there were also references to the 4K HDR Apple TV that we've talked about many times that we've speculated was coming. I mean, we kind of figured this with all the talk. And again, we talked about this in our WWDC show with all the mention, as you just referenced to the H.265 codec that they kept bringing up over and over and over. And in the WWDC keynote sort of indicated that 4K video was on their mind a lot. And since I guess there were references to native 4K playback inside of 1102, and since no iOS device can play native 4K video in that format, we're guessing that that's probably going to be the Apple TV. And I think there was a code that they said, a string in the code, called J105A, which corresponded with what Mark Gurman reported in February was the code name for the fifth generation Apple TV. Plus, I mean, it's been 2 years. It's time for a hardware refresh. I mean, this is probably the least surprising thing, least surprising revelation that came out of all of this.
That's kind of shocking. I guess I hadn't realized it's been 2 years since the new Puck came out. I mean, I think it's been one of Apple's better products. I mean, I think the things they've done with this generation of Apple TV have been really good. They've incrementally added a lot of good features to it. And I mean, I guess this 4K thing is just kind of the what's next, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's not as if the current one was really deficient in any other way. That was probably the biggest shortcoming of any of the devices. On the one hand, we can say, well, it's been 2 years. It's time for a refresh. But on the other hand, I'm like, man, I bought three of these things when they came out 2 years ago. Now I gotta go do it again. Ugh, I don't want to do that.
Cloud DVR. It needs to have its own built into Apple Cloud DVR to where anything you watch on the Apple TV can be stored to Apple's cloud. That would be awesome.
Or, you know, if they just brought back the ability to rent TV shows like they used to do back when iTunes first launched, when you could get an episode of a TV show for 99 cents. Oh my goodness, that was great. And they quickly got rid of that. That's one of these things where they don't really need the cable offering so much as they do, let me just catch up with a season of a show for a flat fee. Like, they already have the content sitting there. Could we just do something where I rent this temporarily? I'll pay for it. You know, I'll happily pay for it, but I don't want to pay. If it's some cheesy TV show I'm going to watch once, I don't want to pay $30 for it, but I would, you know, pay $5 to rent it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense. Rent a TV show if you're just going to watch it once.
They used to do this. I really wish I'd know why they stopped doing it. It's probably the content providers being greedy, but anyway. So another string in the code that we found was the Gizmo Preserving SIM string that showed up. And I guess in 2015, the New York Times reported that the Apple Watch had been internally named Gizmo. So Gizmo Preserving SIM really indicates that the Apple Watch is going to get an LTE chip this year, which, you know, again, this has all been speculated. The rumor had come out, but this seemingly confirms it. So one of the things I got to thinking about with this, would this potentially make the apps faster since they're no longer tethering? And the reason this is on my mind is having tethered a lot this summer, that experience is really just not fast. It seems slower to me in many cases than using just a regular hotspot, putting something on Wi-Fi. It was painfully slow at times. And it's always been sort of like that. It's never been speedy. But I'm wondering if by virtue of the fact that it's not, and I think a lot of those connections they were making with the iPhone were over Bluetooth in some cases, would that speed up the app performance if it wasn't having to tether? God, I hope so.
I think your other point that you put in our show notes about having to pay for that LTE connection for your smartwatch is a really smart one to bring up, because I don't know if I'm paying for my iPad now, my new 10.5 inch iPad. I got the LTE version and I absolutely love it.
What Jim's referring to is most US cellular providers, they will charge less for a smartwatch and they'll let you put it on your plan. So at least in the US, we're charged per device that we add to our plan. So if I want to add a phone or I want to add a tablet, it's a flat $20 a month fee. Doesn't matter. And for smartwatches, it's historically been, for most providers, I think like $5 a month. I checked AT&T this morning and I checked Verizon and I think I checked T-Mobile. So just going through, I don't think I checked Sprint, of course, you know, running joke, I dismissed Sprint. But I looked at all the others and those were all $5 a month. So that's what Jim's referring to, that are you going to want to pay $60 a year for the benefit of having your Apple Watch as part of your cellular plan if it meant that you were untethered to your phone? And I don't know, it feels like it's $60 a year for text messages.
Yeah, I always have my phone. I always have my phone. I mean, I just don't know when I would want to do anything with my watch when I wouldn't have my phone. The iPad was a different story. The reason I wanted LTE on it is because, as you were saying, the speeds of tethering aren't great, and I wanted my iPad to be online all the time instead of having to reconnect it to the tethered Wi-Fi on my phone when I was out doing things. But I just can't see myself wanting to do that many things with a with my watch, that would lead me to want to, you know, not just have it always connected to my phone like it is.
You don't want to watch 4K video on it, Jim?
Right. It's exactly back to our what we were just referring to as watching video on that old iPad or iPod, rather. I use my watch for working out. It works great for that. When I ride my bike, it works great for that. I get a full map of my whole ride. It monitors my heart rate. It does all that stuff just perfectly now with LTE. I can play, I can start up my Pokemon Go on there and it tracks my walking. I can, you know, catch Pokemon or spin, you know, the Pokestops. I can see the weather. I can see my calendar. I don't know. I just, is it worth paying a monthly fee? So, I mean, if I forget my watch at home, I notice by the time I get to my car and I walk back home to get it. It's when are you not with your phone? I can't see that. I've heard some people say, I don't want to get an Apple Watch until it doesn't need the phone. And I'm just wondering what is the true use case there besides I don't want to carry a phone, and who doesn't want to carry a, I don't know. Maybe those people are out there.
So I've thought a lot about this. I've been pondering this a lot. And as someone who works out every single day without fail, having the ability to not need the phone is definitely a good thing. However, I still don't see a scenario at the watch in its current incarnation as something that could act as a true interim iPhone replacement. So consider this scenario. If I'm going running or I'm going to do something, yeah, I could listen to music, and with AirPods, I could take a phone call if I had to. If it had LTE, great. That's wonderful. But that's not all I use my phone for. So when the watch first launched, I had a friend of mine who was poo-pooing the fact that it was tethered to the phone. And that was my answer to him was, when do you not ever have your phone? This guy is allergic to life itself, so he's always like in fear of, I'm going to be too far from my EpiPen, you know, he needs something like that. So my argument to him was, you're always going to be in danger of like being allergic to something, apparently, so you're going to call 911 if you have to, if you get into a situation where it's bad. So again, you're not going to want to be without that safety net. You're not going to want to be without your phone. So the fact that it was tethered didn't seem like a big deal. If I were to leave my watch at home, that's less of a big deal than if I were to leave my phone at home. I'll browse Instagram. I'll take a look at Twitter. I'll check my deliveries app. I'll do all of these things. Many of these things I could do in an abbreviated fashion on a watch, but it's so slow and it's so muted. Have you ever tried to look at Instagram on your watch? It is, the fact that you can is hilarious, but even more than that, you can't see anything. I would have to unlock with my nose too. I'd have to have it at that close of a range to be able to even see anything, and even then you can't make out detail.
Look like Dick Tracy.
Exactly. I'd need a monocle. I'd look like the guy from the Monopoly game, Mr. Peanut. If you're going to have something where it's not tethered to the phone, there are circumstances where, let's say I go to the gym to work out, well, I could leave my phone locked in my glove box in my car and I wouldn't worry about it as much when I'm inside, you know, if something happened. Other than that, I just don't see... I don't see paying $60 a year for the benefit of getting text messages when I'm going to have my phone with me for free and I wouldn't have to pay anything. So I say this now, who knows? But when it comes out, I'll probably be like, yeah, I want one and I'll buy it, and who knows? But I don't necessarily know that I'm going
to... We know.
I don't necessarily think that I would put it on a cellular plan unless, as part of this announcement, we see some... Hey, it's 10 times faster than what it was. Apps load in a fraction of a second. You know, they're hyper responsive.
If there was a whole lot there besides just the LTE, if you know, the processor got a speed bump or something else, I can see where that would be compelling totally to get a new watch if there was additions. But if the only addition is you don't have to have the phone, but all the apps work just about the same as they do now, that's where I don't see there's any advantage.
I could see myself potentially buying the watch, but not potentially adding it to my data plan in that particular case. We know from what we saw at WWDC that Siri and machine learning are supposed to be front and center on the watch, that it's supposed to be all about figuring out what you need to do next and putting things in front of you that you need, hopefully to overcome some of that app slowness.
Which is why you would need pretty much a internet. Yeah. Internet connection.
I used my watch this weekend for the first time I'd done this with it. So I was at the pool for my apartment up on the roof of the building. It gets really hot up there. I have my phone in a bag underneath the chair because just setting the phone out anywhere, I've been up there before when the phone's gotten so hot. It's like, okay, I'm not going to work for now. You need to cool me off. I had a Bluetooth speaker and I'm, you know, playing music by the poolside and I'm hanging out in the pool. It's so hot. I just had it on shuffle, and I realized, hey, I can control the music that my phone is playing from my watch while I'm standing in the pool, because my watch is waterproof now, so I didn't have to take it off. And so, like, if a song would come on shuffle that I didn't necessarily want to hear, I could just pull up my watch and pull up the music app on my watch and hit forward. And I thought that was the coolest thing, is, you know, I could basically just control the music from my phone that was, you know, nicely dry and tucked away underneath my chair straight from my watch while I was in the pool. Now, that was a really cool use case of something that, you know, I've had this watch for, what, you know, 4 or 5 months now. And then I had the other, you know, the Series 1 one for well over a year. And it was just something new that I was like, hey, this is kind of neat. Now, you know, I'm in the water and I can control the music from right here without ever having to grab my phone and risk, you know, dropping it in the pool. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah, I use that daily to jump ahead 45 seconds and 20 seconds here and there every so often with the with podcasts and whatnot. So when I'm working out and my phone's in my pocket, I'll just, you know, if a commercial comes on a, you know, somebody's doing an ad read or something, I'll just jump through it with that. And I agree, completely great.
But that's not something I would need LTE on. I mean, I'm just bringing it up because it's like something, you know, I've had the watch for well over a year and I'm still figuring out things I can do with it. So that's not to say, you know, if they throw some LTE in there, they might find some fancy use case that makes it worth it. But as of right now, I can't think of something that would make me want to go out and buy a new watch, especially since I just paid so much for this one in May. So
good point. What about you, Brad?
I'm pretty sure I'm going to get one. I mean, no matter what, just because I don't have one and it's overdue. Not sure about the LTE part. It seems like it's not very expensive. I mean, if you're talking about $5 a month, that's, you know, half the cost of your Spotify or some other type of, you know, service, you know, subscription type service, you know, half the cost of, say, Netflix or something like that. So it's kind of nominal. $5 is kind of a throwaway amount for some people. So,
I mean, we've already discussed our 1% music clubness here.
This is true. And I still have I think I'm the only one still in that 1% music club at this point. I'm the only one still with both a Spotify and an Apple Music subscription.
No, I have both. Because I had a yearly Apple Music subscription, and now I'm paying for Spotify. So,
oh yeah, Apple Music does do the yearly option now, where I guess it's $99 a year as opposed to
$108.
Yeah, there you go.
The reason I signed up for the yearly is because I buy those iTunes gift cards when they go for sale on cheap on eBay. And so one of the times when I bought one, it was like $85 for the $100 gift card. And when I submitted the code, it actually gave me the option. As soon as I submitted it, it was like, you know, you can add this to your iTunes account, or if you want, you can get a 1-year Apple Music subscription right now for this $100. I'm like, well, there we go. I just paid $80 for my yearly subscription, and now I have, you know, now I have it paid for. So there.
Yeah, that is a good thing. And I got to say, most of the time I was using despite paying for both, I was using my cardio playlist on Spotify an awful lot. And I guess for the last, I don't know, month or so, I've made a concerted effort to switch over to Apple Music as much as possible. And it's taking some adjusting, and it's really weird. Like yesterday, I was when I was working out, I had a high beat per minute playlist. I had started a radio station based off of one of the songs in my playlist. And I thought, oh, this should be fine. And then it started playing slow ballads. And I had to, like, you know, no, this is not right. And then it played some sort of Albanian, like, folk music. Like, it went way off the rails. Now, to be fair, I've had Spotify do the same thing, where I'm listening to music from the 80s and 90s, and all of a sudden it plays Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy from Company C from the, like, 1940s or something. So algorithms aren't perfect. I just want a dark mode on Apple Music. Is that too much?
One of the things I do miss from Apple Music, and one of the reasons I went back to it just to play around with it a week or two ago, was the smart playlist on Apple Music that you can, you know, kind of set up yourself and put all these rules in there. You know, it's got to be a loved song, like loved as in, you know, I like the song. You know, I haven't heard it in the last week. I haven't skipped it 3 times. You know, all these, you can put all these different rules in there to make a really good shuffle playlist from your library. And you can't do that with Spotify that I know of. You can't go in and put all these rules into kind of a smart playlist that I've seen. So that's one of the things that, you know, one of the actual strengths of having the behemoth of iTunes software, you know, all the stuff that's built into iTunes actually comes in handy versus, you know, the other 90% of the time when it's, you know, like putting in a nail with a sledgehammer.
That is one of the things I've noticed about Spotify is the lack of metadata. So using Jim's example, I used to create a playlist of all of my music that, you know, was from the 70s or from, you know, I would say rock hits from 79. So there would be 25 songs on this playlist and the release date would fall in 1979 and it would be the rock genre. And that may be my favorite playlist for the week or something like that. And then I may never listen to it again, but I had that ability to do that when I was on, say, just using straight up iTunes or using Apple Music. And it would be nice to have that on Spotify.
Well, we went down the music hole. I did not expect that. You know, in talking about HomePod, though, I guess that's to be expected. One of the things that I'm looking forward to the most when the HomePod finally does ship is the podcast functionality that will be built into it. So we talk about the sort of lock-in, and I guess if there's no third-party integrations, at least initially, then that counts out using something like Pocket Casts or Overcast inside of HomePod. I guess you would have to use the podcast app to be able to just, you know, tell your HomePod to be able to play episodes. However, I think I would give that a shot just to see how well it worked, because I try that with the Echo now. I try playing our podcast through the Echo, through TuneIn, and it works horribly. And there's no seeming rhyme nor reason.
Could you not ask your phone to play it? Is there any Siri integration with your podcast app on your phone, on your third-party app, to where you could maybe ask it to play something, or is that not doesn't work? I haven't tried it, so I just wasn't sure.
We don't know if you're going to be able to AirPlay or do something like that. However, I think the whole appeal, if I was going to bother to do... Or do you mean from the Echo perspective, or the...
Well, just from your phone, like, you could ask your phone, like me saying, you know, hey lady, Overcast, play Outkick the Coverage or something. I don't know. Can I know you can use Siri now to control some things in apps, right? So could you just ask it to use your existing podcast app to AirPlay something to your HomePod instead of talking to the HomePod directly, like talk to your phone and, you know, kind of have that pass through there?
That's the big question mark with the Siri Kit functionality. Like with the phone, you can actually use Siri to use Venmo or PayPal and send somebody money right from the phone. I have no idea if that works anywhere other than the phone. Maybe it's a Touch ID thing or something. I don't know. So to answer your question, I mean, it's a big question mark at this point, but I'd be very surprised. Unless that integration already exists inside of Siri, I would doubt that anything special is going to appear for the HomePod day one. Just intuition. I could be wrong, but I think out of the box, it's going to work best with their apps first. This is going to be like a first generation iPhone situation where they're completely holding all the cards.
All you have is calendar and contacts, and that's it.
It's the only way they could guarantee a consistent experience, maybe.
This question's kind of out there too, kind of a tangent, but do you think the Echo will ever get Apple Music, like where you could start asking the Echo to play stuff from your Apple Music? Or do you think they're going to stick with, they've got Spotify now, which is not Amazon, so...
Apple Music exists on Android phones. I mean, there's no reason that you couldn't have those things, I suppose, but I don't think it's of paramount importance for Apple to enable it to work with other people's hardware, I think is the bigger issue. Like, it's not important to Apple.
Yeah, because it would be really nice, like I was talking about having these playlists set up, if I could just ask my Echo to play something from Amazon or play something from Apple Music instead of having to ask it to play it from Spotify. I mean, that would be really nice. If anybody out there is listening that can make that happen, there's a beer in it for you.
I think the bigger question you're really wondering is, right now the services are always firmly tied to the hardware. Will we ever get to the point where the services are completely divorced from the hardware or the ecosystem? So we've seen that, you know, the fact that you can get Apple Music on an Android phone is something we never thought we'd see. Something akin to getting iTunes on, you know, Windows or something. But, I mean, in those two particular instances, they've made this sort of exception in the past. But in this particular case, I think they want the draw of that service to be toward the hardware. Realistically, they have so much competition in this space, I think they have nothing to lose by opening it up and allowing you to consume it from anywhere. If I'm in charge of the music division, why would I care if you consume it on an Echo or consume it on a HomePod? For me, as long as you're paying the $10 a month and you have a place to listen to it, that would be
great.
That's probably how Jimmy Iovine looks at it anyway.
And if you're Amazon, you want as many services as you can get on your Echo. So I don't really think they're not selling the Echo as something to drive people paying for Amazon Music, you know, because most people are just going to get that with their Prime membership. So it seems to me like Amazon should have made like a trade where, look, we'll put Amazon Video on Apple TV, which we know now is coming, if you'll put Apple Music on our devices. Deal?
I think part of that that compromise with the Prime Instant Video coming to the Apple TV also was the reason that they're going to start selling Apple TVs again, because remember, Amazon kicked, I think, both the Chromecast and the Apple TV out of their store in the fall of 2015. So they're going to start selling the Apple TVs again. That was, I guess, that was the concession they agreed to make. I don't know. You give Amazon a leg up if you're helping them out, right? They want to drive HomePod sales, make it so that this is the only device you can listen to it on. I mean, you can make the argument either way. It just seems sort of weird that if you're selling a service and you want that service to be profitable, then you put it on as many places as you can and you don't care how people consume it.
And I guess it's the same thing with, we don't have Spotify on Apple TV. I mean, that's kind of stupid. Why would Spotify not want to be on Apple TV?
But you do have it on CarPlay, which is also strange.
Exactly. I mean, what? I don't understand these things. Just give me all my things where I listen to all my things.
I wonder if there's some grand conspiracy there, but I tend to think it's probably just something mundane, as they don't want to put the effort into it. Attention and things are finite in a company. There's only a limited amount of time in a day and so many things you can accomplish in a quarter. And I guess it's just not important to them, though it would be to me. I like something that's ubiquitous. I've said it many times on this show. If something exists on the Mac, if it exists on iOS, if it exists anywhere on the watch, as long as I can use it in multiple places, I will use it more. That's one of the reasons I like Spark. That's one of the reasons I like Todoist. That's one of the reasons I like Pocket Cast. All these things are in multiple places and it just makes it easy for me to consume them. So I'm right there with you. I think that's all that was revealed as part of this this iPhone leak. I guess beta 5 of iOS 11 came out today. Didn't have any HomePod in our release, but it looks like that the iMessage sync and iCloud has been removed in beta 5. So judging from the release notes, it may be something that ships later after iOS 11 is released, which is disappointing because that was one of the things I was looking the most forward to in iOS 11.
Me too. That list gets really gunked up really fast with all kind of stuff, like because of authentication requests and things like that. It gets really junked up in, you know, bank and Google and this site and that site and every other site, you know, sends you text messages with codes now. And then you have these two friends that text you, and then these three friends, and then these different three friends, and you get mixes and matches and that whole list. And then you clear them out one place, you clear them out another. But I also realized that that's something that's got to work perfectly before they're going to release it, because you don't want it messing up, right? I mean, that's some people take saving their messages very seriously, and so you don't want to, you know, you want to make sure it works exactly right on, I mean, and honestly, it's got to work on a lot of different devices now. It's got to work on, you know, different versions of the phone and old versions of Mac and on the iPad. And I'm guessing it's just an iOS, you know, is it just iOS 11 and the newest version of Mac OS that'll actually propagate to, that'll delete, or is it made to work on old versions too? I mean, how's that supposed to work? Is it an iOS 11 feature, or is it just a new iMessage feature that should be available in most places?
I think it's iOS 11 and new Mac OS versions specific, dependent. So at least as I understand it.
Maybe they're doing it to avoid the whole iCloud syncing problem that was kind of the issue a couple of years ago, where you could go ahead and upgrade on your iOS devices, but then it wouldn't work on your Mac. And then you would go to use something on your Mac and you'd go, uh-oh.
Summer 2014 was bad for me for that, but yes, I remember that. That was the iOS 9. Was it iOS 9? Maybe it was 8. I think it was iOS 8 preview that did that for me. God, what a bad summer. Almost put me off of betas forever.
And I'm still just running the betas on my iPad. Same with you, Brian?
Oh, yeah, just running it on the iPad. I am going to a conference, and I'm seriously debating. Now that we're on beta 5, it's like, do I go ahead and upgrade before I go out of town? I don't know. I'm seriously sitting on the fence about going ahead and just taking the jump and putting it on my phone, but I'm really kind of nervous about that. Because if I run into any kind of issue whatsoever, I'm going to blame that iOS. You know, it could be an application bug, could be completely unrelated. I'm going to blame the OS upgrade if something happens. But it's been relatively stable on my iPad. The only real bug that I had run into besides, you know what? Some of my apps are still 32-bit. Some of them still are. I have an app called Mixologist that I haven't used in forever, but it was 32-bit. It finally got updated to 64-bit the other day. I noticed that it finally works again on my iPad. I have a few video games that are old that don't work, and I know there's at least one app that I depend on daily that's still 32-bit that I can't upgrade yet, and I would lose that functionality. So, you know what? Second thought, maybe I'll just stay on iOS 10 for right now.
What about you, Brad? You were running the macOS beta, right, on a secondary machine, but nothing else still?
Yeah. I was going to put 11 beta on my wife's iPad, and it's pretty much just a recipe book for, I mean, she has some doctor reference type stuff, but it's mainly just a recipe book. So I think it would be safe to put on there, but I don't know. I may wait till...
If it messes up, you might get put on a diet, Brad.
Yeah, no kidding. Salads for everyone, every night.
And corn dogs.
We are a corn dog loving family, or at least my kids are. Well, I probably will wait till maybe beta 6 comes out, just so it's a little bit closer to what gold. So
I thought this one was a long time coming. It seems to me like 4 has been out for 2 weeks at least now. I mean, it seems like 5 kind of... I was expecting it before now. I don't know. It seems like they're getting... Usually they speed up, and it seems like it's slowed down.
Feels like it's closer to 3 weeks, I think, that it's been out now. I'm fairly certain.
I mean, usually these things speed up at the end instead of slowing down, and we're doing the opposite this time.
I'm double-checking really quickly. So July 24th was around, I think, the time that Beta 4 came out. So right around that time. So, yeah, it's been not long. It only seems longer. So, yeah, July 24th is the day it came out.
It's because you're waiting for it with bated breath.
Yeah, I guess just been 2 weeks. Wow, I thought it was longer than that. I thought it was 3. Huh. I don't know. I think I could get away with it on the phone, but end of August conferences sort of, make me nervous because I definitely depend on my phone. Just not having that available, I just don't know if that would work for me. So,
yeah, I can see chucking your iPhone across the airport terminal.
Do you know how bad it is to use your MacBook Pro on the road to have to restore from an encrypted image because you can't restore over cellular for all of your stuff? It would just be, if I did have to bail myself out, it would be a very, very annoying process.
And your Android 11 buddy wouldn't let you hear the end of it either.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Well, I think that was all I wanted to talk about this week, just the 11.02 leak and all the things that were in it. Anything you guys want to bring up before we go?
I want to give a quick shout out to all the Pokemon Go players out there. If you're catching all your legendaries and doing your raids, I've had a lot of fun the last 2 weekends meeting up with just crazy, like meeting up with big groups of people doing the new legendary character raids all over uptown and downtown Dallas. We'll end up with 20 plus people on a spot to fight. The previous weekend, Arcatino, Tuno, however you say it, and then this weekend, Moltres and Lugia for the whole time period. It's been pretty crazy. I got on Discord on a channel here for DFW Pokemon Go, and people get on there and just like, hey, where are we meeting? Where are we going? And I mean, you can only do 20 people in a raid at once, and several times we've had to split up in groups in different spots because we had more than 20 people show up to a raid. And most of them are adults, maybe not quite as old as me, but some almost as old as me. So that made me feel really good. Just shout out to all the Pokemon Go raiders out there. I've had a lot of fun with it, and I think it's a real great addition to the game, and just excited to see where it's going next.
Fantastic. Well, that'll do her this week, and I guess we'll be back next week. Have a good week, fellas. Later.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. You can find us on Twitter. The Twitter handle for the show is @infinloopback. That's @infinloopback. I am @BrianB. That's @BrianB. Jim is @BigJim. That's @BigJim. And Brad is @MeesterIdol. That's @MeesterIdle. Thanks for listening, and we hope to talk to you next time.